wanted was for us to sing together again. You know, us Buddhists, we don't have choirs. So it was so wonderful to hear us all singing, even standing out, not knowing where the weekend, and you know, just showing up and being here in the moment. It was just so beautiful that I wanted to go back and be able to share that with my sisters and brothers. So if you would just lead us again, just a couple of rounds of, I think I'm going to teach on the Brahma Viharas tonight, so that would be
Metta, Karuna, Mudita, Upeka. Okay, so you all remember your parts? Okay, so the melody. Metta, Karuna, Mudita, Upeka, Metta, Karuna, Mudita,
composed by a fellow choir director in England named Nick Prater, who thought, well, why shouldn't Buddhists have choirs too? There you have it. It's a gift from him.
Well, I have to say we know that one. So I thank you so much tonight for showing up. You see, that's what our responsibility in the world is to just show up. My teacher would tell me, Paniwadi, don't worry about what you're going to do when you get there. Just show up. And it's something about showing up that allows us to open up and to be present with the moment, but also to be unified with who else just shows up. So many times we show up, but we show up with our agenda. We know what to do. We know what should be done. We know how it should be done. We know who should do it. You know? And so in that process, there is the destruction of unification, and it becomes the budding and the development of ego, and then with that comes all the other stuff. And so I was thinking tonight when we were standing outside, you know, and she said, well, you know, we can just sing outside. And I was sitting in the car. I'm like, you know, I know I have to talk. So I'm sitting in the car with my scarf around my neck. And my host just asked me, do you want to get out the car? I said, ooh. I said, I'm gonna sit here. And I was just so shamed. They decided, you know, I used to be a singer in my other life, and we worked so hard to protect, you know, to protect our voice. We would do anything that, you know, could put your voice in jeopardy. So I wasn't getting out the car because I didn't want to get hoarse. And then you all started, decided you were going to sing, and it was like so beautiful. Who could resist? Who could stay away? Who could not be drawn into the essence of it? You see, we see things out here as concrete, but it's not that which we see, but that which is invisible that gives life to what we see. And so when we want to know what something is, we have to go beyond what we see and we have to go into that space that came before that. What came before that? So, pardon me if I talk a little bit about the Buddha now, but I'll talk about everybody else too here and there. But the Buddha said that, you know, I want to just make sure you understand the truth of suffering. That there is suffering, and suffering has a cause. And there can be the cessation of it. And there is a path leading to the cessation of it. But he went further than that. He broke it down, because some of us just need it broken down to a little kindergarten way. And he said, suffering should be understood. How can I understand something, truly understand something that doesn't touch me in my own inward parts, doesn't touch me deeply, it doesn't, that there is no identification with it. So if we want to get to the understanding of suffering, it takes us going to the places where we ourselves have suffered. So you could say then that there is a benefit to suffering. You may not feel that good. You know, all medicine's not good. Neither is surgery, but when it cuts that tumor out and the body heals, then it feels good. And so we can take something that does not feel good, but it can be used for good. The suffering that we experience. And so the victory then goes not to the perpetrator of the suffering, but it goes to the experience of suffering that's transformed into understanding. Suffering should be understood. He said that the cause of suffering should be abandoned. The cause of suffering should be abandoned. Everybody's talking about peace. Everybody wants peace. Where I live, we have about 4 or 5 peace panels. They just want to know peace. What will peace look like in 2020? What will peace, you know, and everybody, what do you think peace is going to look like in the next century? You know, all these kinds of questions. Peace is going to look like next year what justice looks like this year. You know, if there is not a justice, if there is not a sense of equality, if there is not this harmonious action one to another, then no need to talk about peace. Because peace is not the cause of something, it's the fruit of something. So there's something that produces peace. And sometimes, it's not all kissy face and folding hands. You know, sometimes, you know, Scripture says the kingdom of heaven suffers violence and the violent take it by force. And that means that pacifists are not necessarily passive. Actually, we're active, actively engaging, putting the leavening in, because a little leaven leavens the whole lump. And so if we could think about the action that's needed to lay the groundwork, the planting that's needed to produce the harvest of peace, that's where the work needs to be done. It's the ways that we think. It's what's in our deepest heart of hearts. It's what our intention is. Mind is chief. Mind made are we. Whatever we think and ponder on, that's the inclination of our mind. He abused me, he beat me, he robbed me. Those who harbor such thoughts in them, anger will never be appeased. And so we have to look at what's in our own hearts. There's no war that started itself. But war is born and bred in the heart and in the mind. So that's where we start. And not in a collective heart and mind, but in an individual heart and mind. And so instead of me looking at you and thinking about what I think you need to be doing, I need to look at me and see what. what is in me? The anger, greed, delusion, hatred, pride, selfishness, jealousy, envy, avarice. You know, these qualities, negative qualities, produce generosity, love, kindness, compassion, joy in the successes of others, calm. You know, it's something to just bring calm to a situation. You may not have the answer, you may not even know what the problem is, but if you can just calm, center within yourself, there is something that you bring that's part of the solution. When we come into a situation informed about how it is, even if we don't have the solution, there's something about being informed, having the information to understand what came before this that creates a pathway by which we can come to some beneficial resolution. When the thought arises in our mind, and we can put it into one or two categories, fruitful or unfruitful, beneficial or unbeneficial, wholesome or unwholesome, when we can divide like that, we're halfway there. But it takes something else. The abandonment. You know, sometimes, you know, we know something's not right, but I just did it anyway. So it's the abandonment part that we have to work with. I can talk about this because this is not America. This is Canada. So there's a woman in Basanga. You know what? Maybe I better not put this one on my website.
Do you want me to stop at this point? Okay.
I told the story like 4 or 5 times. I don't want her to think I'm picking on her. But she was very hurt and frustrated because her friends were turning against her, and she was voting for Obama. And she came to me distressed, and she said, "Honey, Wadi, I just don't know what to do. I just don't know how to fix this thing." And I live in the South, in the U.S., and an ultra-conservative, area. And I have all white sangha. And so they come to me with some problems, thinking I have some insight into, you know, some of the, maybe the liberal mind, something like that, I don't know. But anyway, so I said, "Well, what is it you'd like me to do?" I said, "Well, I just want you to tell me how to get my friends back." I said, I got that one. Take that Obama bumper sticker off your car, stop talking about him, and you'll have it back. That's all it took. And actually, she did that. And then she got her friends back. If they were friends, I mean, they started sending her hate mail. I mean, so, you know, you have to decide who's really your friend. But it's like this. There is an abandonment that is required to bring about a change. And sometimes we want to change, but we don't want to abandon the causes of certain things. There's some reasons that we don't. Some is fear of losing power that we have over others. Some is fear of the power others have over us. No. Some is fear of losing the respect of others. Some is fear of losing some personal gain. There's some, you know, there are all kinds of fears that we have that keep us from abandoning that which we know is not useful, is not beneficial. Not And so it takes a certain avia, a certain fearlessness to walk the true spiritual path. A monk is one born inwardly. It is not the priestly garments or the robe or whatever, or the title, the avia, the respect that's given that makes one that, but it's the intentions of one's heart followed by the actions that one takes. The Buddha lived in the in India. And there was a caste system. It got worse after he died, but while he was there, it was still pretty bad. Still pretty bad today. And he said, a Brahmin is not a Brahmin by birth, holy man by birth. But he's a holy man by his actions. And so there is this truth of suffering that should be understood. There's the abandonment of that which leads to suffering. Then he said, the path to the cessation of suffering should be realized. To realize something takes we have to count up the cost. We have to, it's like seeing a field and selling everything you have to buy. It's the going for broke. You know, it's not being lukewarm, it's being hot or cold. And in times like this, where the whole world has gone crazy, it's going to take something on the part of those of us who say we know what is good, what is just, what is right, what is of a good report, what has merit, what has value. And if we are the ones who know, as we say, we know, then there is something that should be, that can be realized. We have to have the confidence that it can be realized. You know, for many, many, many years, I have no problems with God or Jesus. But I believe something in the Bible, that I could come up to the fullness, the measure, the stature of Jesus. But I couldn't figure out quite how to do that just through reliance. Because I had no problems relying on Jesus. But I did have a problem with you sometimes. And I needed something that would help me, like working with this mind, that could teach me how to look at something, see it for what it is, and how to cut it away out of my life. Something that brought me into a self-mastery. It made me and my words one. That my thoughts and my words and my actions correspond. Isn't that perfect correspondence? And so I started thinking, if you want to know what the master needs, might not be able to like just ask his disciples, his students. They don't know they're trying to get it too. I might have to ask another master what a master meant. And maybe I can touch another part of the elephant and I can get a holographic picture. And that's what I did. And I've been enriched for it. Because truth is truth wherever you find. So there is this realization that comes. And we realize as we actualize, as we walk in something. That's our only realization, what we actually walk in. That's our truth. That's our realization. And our realizations have power, whichever way we turn. Whether we turn towards good, or as Darth Vader said, to the dark side. It has power. Because power is amoral. It doesn't choose, but we do choose. So he said, the path leading to that means it takes something from me. I have my faith, but it takes something more than just my faith. It takes, in that moment, being able to stand on the truth that I embrace, that I believe, even in the face. It takes being willing to look at myself and be brutally honest about the role I play in it. You know, I'm an advocate for a lot of things, but I have to admit that I don't talk that much about the ecology because I don't like walking and I don't like bicycle riding. So, I need more gas than I should. I'm not ecologically there. I'm working on it. I'm cultivating a mind towards it, but I don't have it yet. So I don't teach on anything that I'm 100% committed to. But that which I do know, and that which I am willing to give myself to, my whole life to, that I will talk on. Because there is a transmission of truth, of compassion, and of power that goes forth when one's thoughts and one's words and one's actions agree. So that's why we have such a problem with our political system. You know, when we see that and we understand that, we don't look there for the answer. So it's not that our politicians are not going to provide the answer. But we collectively can when we become unified. Tonight we got an example of what it's like to have a unified mind and heart. We had an example to experience these words that we were saying, these Pali words, metta, karuna, mudita, upekkha, meaning loving kindness, compassion, sympathetic joy, or joy in the successes of others, and equanimity. We call them the four Brahma Viharas, or the four heavenly abodes. They're heart-mind states that we operate from. Because before you undertake anything, get into the Brahma Viharas. And then the only thing that can come forth is that which proceeds out of the heart of the heavenly realm. Loving kindness. How do we know what that is? It's not a thought, but it is something that we experience. Direct experience. You can feel it. It opens the heart. It warms the heart. It gives brightness. It gives a sense of safety. Even when somebody does a random act of kindness, like being in the grocery store with must have 25 children. It's a, you know, and they look back and say, oh, that's all you have, please go ahead. The heart just opens right up. But if you're standing behind them and they have that whole card and they look and they see what you have and they don't, the heart, it just closes over like that. She could have let me go. You see, I only have one thing. And then you start with the proliferation of thoughts, and these thoughts proceed not from her, but they proceed out of our own heart. That's how we can know whether we are in the Brahma Viharas, heavenly abode, and nobody else puts us there. This is a conceiving in our own heart mind. So, the spiritual masters say we have to look for that. We have to look deeply for that. I'm that woman standing behind you with your one carton of eggs. It's not even a thought in my mind that you might be hating on me. You know, I'm not even thinking that way about you. I'm not even thinking about you. But there you are behind me, just hating on me. And so he says for us to examine ourselves constantly. That's what this mindfulness thing is all about. What is arising in me? And when we see something arising that has no basis in the heavenly realm, that abandon it, this needs to be cut off. And it's as simple as that. Oh, funny one. Should be thinking like that. Just look at her and feel some compassion for this woman with 20 children, you know. I mean, something, and it's just that quick that we can switch that thought with a karuna, a compassion. That's it. Now, this is a practice. It takes practice. It's not a thing you think about or you intellectualize about. This is spiritual practice. This is what we have to do in the moment. And it becomes a full-time job, I can tell you. You don't have time to worry about anybody else, or even think about anybody else. It is a full-time job. I don't care how good you are, it's still a full-time job. And then you start to see things that you didn't even know that. Dang, I didn't even know that was sad. I'm really good. I mean, you know, I'm so kind. I do all these things for people. Yeah, and we don't know sometimes what's there. So the same way we didn't know that something was there in us, maybe someone who acted in an unkind way towards us didn't know that it was there. They didn't see it. So can we cover them with some grace? You know, there's a Tibetan practice that I do call accepting defeat and giving the victory to others. That doesn't even sound good. But it's a practice that we can undertake if we want to be grown-ups. If we want, you know, if we want to be mature and lacking in no good thing, this is what it takes. And what happens when we undertake these kinds of is that we toughen up and we don't care what's coming. Praise or blame, same thing. Pleasure or pain, fame or shame. We can take it anyway it comes, we can handle it. And there's something so empowering about that. Puts you squarely in the experience. Truth is as truth does. Love is as love does. Compassion is as compassion does. Compassion doesn't think about it. Compassion acts. And so it's a joy, it's a wonder to walk through life like this. It is purposeful. You know, searching for our purpose? We're talking about bringing heaven on earth. The Brahma Viharas, our mental state, that's all that we have. How I think about a thing is the way it is for me. That's it. And so when I see something, and it's not the way that is helpful or beneficial, you say, well, then how could this seeing in a different way make it different? Everything that we see is the fruit or the product of somebody's mind. Everything. And so there is that space of going into the realm of no-thingness, where the potential for everything is. And as we dip ourselves in there from time to time by just cutting off our discursive thoughts, and then stepping back out of that space, it gives a freshness and a new way to look at things. And a resourcefulness arises because we're fearfully and marvelously made. A resourcefulness arises in us to be part of a solution rather than more. In 1963, it's a very difficult time in the United States, particularly for African Americans. And I had gone down to visit a friend who lived in the South. I was from the North. And I didn't know that, when I got off the train and walked along the platform, I didn't know I was supposed to step off. Woman was coming up. So I didn't step on. But that night the KKK came to where I was for me. And because the woman, the grandmother of the girl I went to see, had been there long, generations, her family had been there. And she asked them to let her whoop me, correct me. She said, and you know, she's from the North, and we don't want to have a problem down here. Let me take care of it. And they said, okay. And she got this, they said it was a twig, but I'm telling you, it was a branch off the tree. And she whooped me publicly in the front yard so that they could see. And she had to do a good job, because if she didn't do a good enough job, that's why they were there. And the next morning, I was on the bus back home, and I never went south again. Now I find myself in the South, living there, went by my own free will, and setting up a spiritual center down there. I can't figure it out, I tell you the truth. But this is what I can say. Living there amongst people who hate me is perfecting
you have to be careful what you say because you will be called to the test.
It's perfecting my love because I'm learning what came before that, what causes a certain view or idea to take root in the heart and mind, and through clear seeing and observation with no axe to grind, I can see the fear or the pain or the ignorance, you know, or the suffering that caused unwholesome, unarisen mental states to arise. And that fostered and that fed and that feed today already arisen unwholesome mental states. And I can also see clearly what I can do to foster unarisen wholesome states that they can dispel the darkness. And also, I'm learning how to maintain a risen, wholesome state. So that's where the joy comes in. When there is an inner development that the world didn't give you, so the world can't take it from you. And yet, what's in you, rising up and flowing out of you, can cover even your enemy and bring about a change. Maybe long time. Maybe you'll never even see it. But there is the confidence born on what has been accomplished to know that there is more that will be accomplished. And so we can learn to go through life boldly. This is what I try to teach the children there. They're not there, they look like me. But they've been abused, neglected, hated. They've been, some come from families never finished high school, ever. So, when they turn 16, they get turned out. Hardly make it in the world today. You know, there's no farm to send them to work on. It's a, you know, can't compete. Some have, you know, have been rejected because of sexual orientation. Most are poor. And poverty, you know, has its own challenge. And so for the past 3 years, I've brought 75 of them in to live with me. I'm in a place where 9 out of 10 of the kids that I take in were abused by their own parents sexually. You know, in North Carolina, they just made this law a couple of years ago that it's a felony to sexually abuse your child. It was a misdemeanor. The felony for me to abuse your child, but a misdemeanor for me to abuse my own sexually. I mean, I never could conceive of a place that grew its own victims. And so I stood against that. Now I'm really messing up. You know, because it's sort of like the, you know, like the thing we don't talk about. Oh yeah, but we have to talk about this. Because there's no way that these children can get free and ever feel safe if it's not talked about. Mother said, why don't you just keep your mouth shut like the rest of us did if a daughter comes forward. So, coming in, how do we move? A sister tonight gave me a card and told me about a center that you have here for the homeless that she's working with. So our spiritual practice has to go more than just between us and God. Or whatever our spiritual discipline is, you know, all of the sublime qualities of spirituality that we embrace. But it has to go to these other spaces. Because there is something needful. And only we can. But when we start doing this, we see a brand new world. We see what's possible. We see our place in it. Life has purpose. We see the other as oneself. You know, if this accepting defeat and giving the victory to others, it can be a hard thing. But I tell you, if you master it, you get so free that it doesn't matter what happens. All before this past year, I was winning at real estate. You know, I mean, every time there was a recalibration of the market and the cycle, if I didn't have money, I just called some people, how much you got, how much you got, how much you got. I know how to make money with it. They give it all to me, and I'd just be buying up foreclosed properties and this and that. You know, I was winning every time. A lot of people were losing. I was like, well, it's just business. If I don't buy it, somebody's going to buy it. You know, so So I'm not saying anything about that. You know, it's some sort of like how the world goes around. But what I am saying is if you can stand to win, you got to be able to stand and lose. Otherwise, you'll lose your mind when you lose. And so here comes a time, and I have things. You know, I think some of these things are, you know, for divine purposes, you know. But yet, I find myself on the losing end. My Saga couldn't understand. It sounds like a congregation. My Saga couldn't understand why I wasn't upset. I said, because I practice. I practice being able to win and be able to lose. Everybody likes it when somebody says something good about you. But if somebody says something not good about you, we can't tolerate it. We just can't take it. But you've got to be able to, if you can accept the praise, you got to be able to accept the blame. If you can accept the fame, just know shame is coming. You have to be able to accept it. So in this way, we don't get too high, but also we don't get too low. That's what that moving towards equanimity. The only difference is that equanimity is not earthbound. It's not like standing there and you can't see the forest for the trees. It's like coming up to the apex, riding the crest of the paradox. And when you can get to that place, it doesn't matter. You just know within yourself, your own inner integrity. I know what is right. I stand for what is right. I do what is right. And I accept the consequences. This living in this inner integrity is so delightful. And it brings you into the path leading to the fullness of the measure. So I encourage you tonight to develop what you know. Let our last days be our best days. How is that possible? We thought, okay, well, you know, we'll like just hold up in with all of our assets and all the things we've accumulated in all the years and all of our love and all that. But the Buddha said, I am of the nature to grow old. There's no way to avoid it. I am of the nature to die. There's no getting around. All that I hold dear, I will be ultimately separated from. Can't prevent it. Everything around me has as its basic nature impermanence. Nothing stays the same and nothing less. So the only thing that we take with us are our actions. That is the seed that produces the flower when we breathe our last breath. How wonderful to just know. I just wanted to say that I received a letter. I was through, but I received a letter from an email from a group in India last year with the email, and they asked me if I would come over and help them. There was 10 untouchable villages, about 30,000 people. And they wanted to start a new society because in their spiritual tradition, something has gotten lost in the translation. And I think, you know, it was something in the Upanishads that says something like, you know, Baker bakes. you know, and how society is ordered. Some are bakers, you know, some are clothes, some are school teachers, some, you know, are administrators, some rural countries, some protective countries. So, you know, it takes all of these occupations and so forth to make a society run. Well, somewhere along the line, that thing got rigid and codified. So now, if you're born as a launderer, washer of clothes, you cannot do anything else. You can't pull yourself up and become something else. You stay right in that system. But you're born into that, you die into that, and that's your karma. And so there are these four groups within the caste system. The Brahmin being the holy men. Then you have those that are rulers and heads of government. You have a group that's the runs the administration, and you have like the merchants, and within these groups, they say that the ones with the highest and holiest stature proceed from, you know, the head of Brahma, and the next group from the heart of Brahma, and the next loins of Brahma, and from the feet of Brahma. And then there are others who don't proceed from the body of Brahma. And these are called the untouchables, the unmentionables, and the scheduled class. Those are the people that I work with. I believe that because I know about being perceived in a certain way. So he sent this email after I called in. I said, well, how do you find me? I mean, I'm just this little black woman in Western North Carolina, in this little poke town, rural town, in Appalachia. And he says, well, I Googled for African American none, you're the only one. I know you know something about this, about misunderstandings, and you know something about suffering due to misunderstanding. And you know something about, you know, institutionalized fixations that affect the whole society and make people act the way they do, or do what they do. And so I wouldn't have to try to explain it to you. You would get it. So I said, I do get it. And I will come. And I went there. And I thought about what happened in our own country in some years and what's happening now. I mean, we have a country where we have more people in jail than the whole rest of the world. You know, because that's the new form. You know, that's the new way of marginalizing and locking away a people. And so when I got there and I saw the life and I saw such a kindly people, because they did have some understanding and they understood why people thought the way they thought. Just don't maybe know what to do about it, but they understood this. But their children have internet. You know, they see the world. And they said, no, I'm not going to die like this. I might have been born like this, but I'm not going to die like this. Or either I'll die trying to get free from this. And I see blood bank coming. Because they are powerless. These children rise up where the parents did not. And so that's why I got involved with the work. I see their children like I see my own. I see the children in my community like I see my own. What I want for them, I want. What I want for my children, I want for these children. And that's how we have to live. Seeing others as oneself. And so this is the work that I do. I go around when somebody asks me. I don't go, you don't ask me, I don't come. If you ask me to come, I show up. Bearing witness. I don't come telling you what you need to do, how you need to do it, because nobody can tell me. And then if I can help, I help. And I know that I can't do it by myself. But everybody can go look see. Somebody has to go. And somebody comes back and gives a report. And it gives the opportunity for so many to help in whatever way that they can. There's some going back over with me. 8 people went with me last year. I have 5 people right now working with my kids while I'm here on the West Coast. We started a business, a bakery. We're baking gluten-free bread so that they can won't always need a hand out, but they can have a hand up. You know, we've got a contract in a regional chain, and as soon as I can get some reliable equipment that doesn't break down every day, we're going to make some money at it. But going somewhere, just doing what you can, how you can, and it feels good. Even when it doesn't come to fruition, you know you gave everything you had, and you can die without regret. Now I really
sure.
Thank you so much, Venerable, for sharing. Thank
you for my time. Do you want to do another song?
That might be a nice way to end the evening.
Sure.
Yeah.
What do we do? Want me to board again?
Sure.
Well, maybe let's do the one again. It's called the Contemplation Chant. With the Om Mani Padme Hum and La Ilaha Il Allahu from Islam and Shalom Shanti, the Hebrew and Sanskrit words for peace, and then Gloria in Excelsis Deo from the Christian tradition. Gloria to God in the highest. So the idea is I'll teach all the parts, make sure that we all know all the parts, and then you could stay with just one part the whole time, but I encourage you to try different ones. Try different ones. Try them all. Collect the whole set is my approach to the world's religions. And but that we all are responsible for making sure that there's a balance. So if you notice that Islamic part is dying out because maybe it's too hard and nobody remembers it, then you better be the one to bring it back in or whatever. Okay, well, so we'll start off with
Om Mani Padme Hum. Om Mani Padme Hum. Om Mani Padme Hum. La ilaha illallah.
thank you. Thank everyone for showing up tonight. And as a reminder, there is a Donna basket to help with Venerable's charitable works.